We have an interview tonight with Nick Lang, senior producer at Turn 10 Studios, about management and leadership within the game industry. Plus, a week before the PlayStation VR comes out, Oculus announces the next step for their Rift. Tonight is October 9th, 2016, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwell.
Stumbling over my words. Thankfully, I'm not, like, trying to debate anything tonight. It's a good thing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a no-debating edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. You're joining us live here on this splendid night of television. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Voice of Geeks Network. We're in a chat room. You can head on over live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And you can also check in on the site if you want to get some points on the October leaderboard. You can check in just like Tiger Claw and Sky. They checked in at some point during the intro to the show. If you're on the podcast feed, you can listen for a passphrase that is rudely interrupting the show. Come to the site, put in that passphrase, get the exact same amount of point and love from all of us. So a little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, that is all one word, or toll-free in North America is 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can comment on an episode page at vognetwork.com. So a couple of housekeeping things. There is going to be no live show on October 23rd, which is not next week, but the week after. So we will be here next week because PlayStation VR comes out, so that's a good show to have live. So you can hear all about that because I should be getting mine on the 13th, Amazon willing on that one. And we are going to actually have some more stuff on our YouTube page over at Vogue Network. The Dragon Con Super Show, if people were probably here on the stream on Labor Day weekend, we actually aired the audio portion of the Dragon Con Super Show that we did over two nights in the Vogue Suite in the Hyatt at Dragon Con, featuring myself, Rob from Orange Lounge Radio, and then people from Critical Myth, British Invaders, and Pod Culture. It was split over two nights. On the stream, you heard them both back-to-back, but they're going to be two separate videos. We are finishing up putting in some of the photos that we had gathered from the hosts, and those should be going up. Everything's almost done, probably tonight or early tomorrow morning. Those will go up on the YouTube feed. I also shot two videos while I was at Siege this week in the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo with the Indie Cluster area about some of the games that were there. Only got two of those. Just due to time constraints and space constraints and stuff, but they're good ones. So we will have those up probably in the next week or two. One thing I did kind of want to follow up on, because I talked about this a little bit last week, was I had gotten some of the LEGO Dimensions Year 2 stuff, because they came out last week. And as I reported last week, my save file got corrupted because of Year 2. And we had lost, it was a shared save file between me and my girlfriend. We lost probably about 100 hours worth of work. Now, during the show, it turns out, and it was coincidence that it was during the show that I saw this, because I had actually tweeted angrily about it and tagged LEGO Dimensions, as you do. And the LEGO Dimensions customer support Twitter account replied to me their standard reply, that they reply to everything, of their support page. So, me... being the, you know, software developer that I am, decide I'll go ahead and write up the steps that I had taken to corrupt the save file in a good, QA person format. And so I did, and there was about 15 steps. I'm like, I did this, this happened, this happened, this happened. Basically wrote a QA bug report. And they responded, And they said, well, we first, you know, I did not actually do this. So they did the whole, did you turn it off and back on again, which I did, but I didn't fully turn off the Xbox One. Because remember, when you turn off your Xbox One, it doesn't actually turn off all the way. It just goes into sleep mode. So they had me unplug the Xbox One and then plug it back in, you know, 30 seconds later or whatever. I actually, like, left it turned unplugged for the evening just because. So that kind of does a hard reset of the entire console and came back up. And so I, you know, plugged it in, and before I went to Forza Horizon 3, I decided I'm going to go and load this up and just see, you know, just so I could say, hey, it didn't work, haha. Go in, try to load the save file, and it loads. And it goes directly into the story level that we were going to be going into next. It didn't go to the main hub world or whatever. It went directly into the story mode. And I realized the one thing that I didn't try before angrily giving up, when I was loading my save file of LEGO Dimensions, and it kept crashing, I had nothing on the object portal. I had all the minifigs off of the portal. But when I was doing my testing, I didn't actually pull my portal off of the shelf that we keep it on. It's still plugged into the Xbox, but it was on the shelf, and because I have so many minifigs, we actually had some minifigs on the portal. And so I'm actually guessing that it was not the save file being corrupted at that time. It was the fact that it was trying to load directly into a story level, and since there were no minifigs on the portal, it crashed to the desktop. So I haven't tried it since then, but it looks like that probably was the issue, because I was able to get back into the save file and all our stuff was still there and everything's still there. So I think it was just I didn't try putting a minifig on the portal for whatever reason. And if we had done that, it would have worked. I think our 100 hours has been saved. And I know Breakman says he would have sold the game angrily by now. My girlfriend had already started another game, and she was excited because she got to go through everything again with all the characters and everything. So, yeah. So, that is, if you have problems with LEGO Dimensions, try having something on the portal. If that actually happens to you. Dungeon says that's a messed up solution, but yay, save file redemption. They actually their solution did not include that. What they asked me was hard reset the console, which I had done. If that didn't work, they wanted me to uninstall and reinstall the entire game from to the hard drive. Luckily I didn't get to that step, but I was about to. And then I went in and I'm like, all right, quit Forza Horizon 3, time to play. Which I still have not been able to play online yet. Nobody's on it online that have wanted to do co-op or something, or if they have been, they haven't seen my messages. Forza Horizon 3 is still fun. Speaking of that, we do have an interview tonight that I will be getting into. I'm going to talk about a story first, and then we're going to get into this interview. And I'll explain why, even though it's with someone that works on the Forza Motorsport franchise, we talk very, very little about Forza in the interview, and I will explain that. That is coming up. It is not a live interview, but it's still a very interesting one that I wanted to include on the podcast and instead of like on the YouTube stream, because it's really not a YouTubeable interview. It's more suitable for this format. But Siege was this weekend, the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo, which is like the a GDC type of thing for the Southeast. However, there were a lot of games being shown, a lot of indie games. And I, as I said last week, you know, 10 years ago when I first went to Siege at the first Siege, it was a lot of people hopeful about getting into the game industry. And I could count on one hand how many games were actually being played. And less of them were even made in Georgia. Some of them were, you know, people just were playing Rock Band, which is, you know, not a game that's made down here in the Southeast. But, like, I could still, even those type of games, I could count on one hand. It was very much about here's how to make games. And this year, it's all a lot of those people who might have been at the first Siege or at the very first few Sieges showing off their games. So there were a lot of games that could be played. Several of them we've had on the show before. Snarf Quest was there yet again. The point-and-click adventure game based on the Larry Elmore property. Pixels, which we've interviewed both here on the podcast and on YouTube. Their color-based platformer were there. And a couple of other people that we've talked to in the past. So it was really fun. It was nice to see. There were two good keynotes. One is by the one of the people we're going to talk to later tonight. And the other was with Rand Miller, who was the creator of Myst and Riven. And those, and Abduction, O-B-D-U-C-T-I-O-N, is his brand new game. They just got kickstarted. They were kickstarted and then released 9 months after their due date, which he actually considers a success because it was within a year of their date. It's a lot of people are saying really good things about it. So it was really interesting to hear them talk about that and his keynote. Rand Miller's keynote talking about like why they didn't do Myst 3 and 4, what happened with Uru, you know, publishers and why publishers are great and terrible at the same time, and things like that. So it was really interesting to hear him talk. And just, you know, being able to be around a lot of that positive energy and stuff. So it made me wish I had more time to make games, to be perfectly honest. Maybe we need another game jam. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase Russia. So the other thing that kind of that happened this week that was a big this is a big like conference week, convention week, even outside of the gaming industry, but inside the gaming industry, we had Siege this weekend, but earlier this week was Oculus Connect, which was Oculus's convention. Where they have all their developers in to show them the new stuff, and they did a bunch of big keynotes and stuff. And the next week are Steam Developer Days, so it's really a big month for this type for these type of things. But Oculus Connect was this past week, and one of the things that I wanted to kind of call out, I didn't get to go, but from other people that went, it was a very positive experience there, which is kind of interesting because the main community, it seems, for Oculus and Vive is on Reddit, and as probably you know, if you've even thought about the No Man's Sky thing that's going on, and if you should read if you care, if you want to see a train wreck, read about the subreddit drama on that. But Reddit is extremely negative in the VR subs, especially the Oculus sub right now, and it's turned a couple people off to being in a part of the community, maybe not about VR in general, but about the community. But Oculus Connect seemed to be very positive, according to people that have been there, and it's a very hopeful time. And I know we talked about Palmer Luckey, the creator of the Oculus Rift, kind of the inventor, a couple weeks ago. He was not there at all. They did not put him on stage. They didn't mention him. In fact, it really seemed like, you know, Big Daddy Facebook came in, and they actually finally added their logo to the Oculus Rift. Now it's Oculus from Facebook. And that kind of came in, and they even showcased some of their diversity stuff and tried to kind of basically say, this is Oculus. This isn't Palmer Luckey's Oculus. This is Oculus. And they also made a couple of announcements about VR. Basically bringing it up to speed, up to parity with the HTC Vive. And the way that they're doing that, because right now the Oculus Rift, if you get it today, and you're not a cool developer that can get early hardware or anything like that, it's a seated experience where you're using an Xbox controller. And that's what the Oculus Rift is today. But they have always stated that's going to change. And they finally announced when and how much it's going to cost to get it to change. And Polygon has reported that Oculus finally announced that its virtual reality touch controllers will be released on December 6th for $199, which is exactly the price I said they would cost. And everybody's like, no, that's too high. No, that's exactly what they're going to cost. The bundle will come with VR Sports Challenge and The Unspoken. Oculus CEO Brandon Uribe also described with the ease with which developers can add touch and haptic support for their games, and a new Guardian system will keep users within the space that is tracked. So the Guardian system is kind of like HTC Vive's chaperone system, which basically the chaperone system puts up kind of like a Tron-like grid in front of you if you get too close to the edges of your play area that you calibrate before you can play anything. And Oculus said for a long time they weren't going to have their own chaperone system. Developers would have to do their own chaperone system. They even said, we're not going to do room scale. Well, at Oculus Connect, they actually announced, yes, we're going to do room scale, and we've got this Guardian system. So they're actually finally playing catch-up with the Vive, but I've used the touch controllers once, and they are a little bit better than the Vive's controllers. So Oculus kind of has a little bit of the better technology, even though the Vive and HTC and Steam have been there for the better part of a year. The touch hardware will also support 360 degrees of play area by putting a sensor behind you, and there is a room scale option with a third sensor if you have the space. Extra sensors will be $79 and ship on December 6th for the new sensors. So what that basically means is that the way they originally envisioned the Oculus Rift running was there's two sensors, and these sensors on your desk will find where the Rift is in real space and where the touch controllers are in real space. And they wanted to put them, you'd put them on either side of your desk. So you would have a 180-degree play experience. But if you turned around, it wouldn't work as well because it would lose vision. So they really encouraged developers to create 180-degree experiences, which developers were like, but on the Vive, I can have things behind people. And so what Rift developers did who have experience with the Vive is they took one of those two sensors and put it behind them. And that way you got 360 degrees. But they don't accurately track where you are in the room. So you need the third sensor for that with the way that the touch sensors actually work. Whereas the Vive sensors, you have two, and they're just in opposite corners. The touch sensors aren't supposed to be like that. So in order to get the exact same experience you get with the HTC Vive, you're actually going to have to spend $80 more than the Vive. If you just want the touch controllers and the 360, you don't want to care about moving around in your room, which is what room scale gives you, getting an Oculus Rift actually costs the same as getting an HTC Vive. Because the Oculus Rift was $200 cheaper than the Vive because it didn't have the touch controllers, whereas the Vive shipped with the touch controllers. Kaijudo in chat says, PlayStation VR is going to set the world on fire. I think it's going to go far. I do too. I have not played the PlayStation VR since E3 several years ago, even though I know that they are being demoed at Best Buy's near me. I have not gone, but I do have it. I've got it on order. It should come on the 13th. I will talk all about it. I am very optimistic about it. I think it's going to be great, and I think it's going to be wonderful consumer entry-level consumer VR that's not based on a mobile phone. I think it's going to be fantastic, especially with the content they have. I'm very excited to actually get to try the content on my own and hopefully be able to talk about it next week, this coming week. Talking about Reddit a little bit, Dungeon Buster says, some subreddits can turn massively negative, which makes it harder to sort through the noise, but not all of Reddit is like that. The Oculus subreddit was actually really great for a while, and then Facebook bought Oculus, and then it turned out, and then it was just, there was no point. Even I got, like, kicked out, kind of. Not kicked out by the mods, but, like, it was just, they did not want me to be a part of the community anymore, and so I didn't. And that's why I'm not even thought of in that community anymore as a VR podcaster. Dungeon Buster continues, the subreddit for The Division did a 180 these past few weeks based on the news coming out on a new patch. Before then, it was a cesspool of darkness because of how badly received the changes the games were. And he says, I'll be honest, Reddit can be moody, but you can find great info on there from time to time, and then the next day wish you were blind because of what you accidentally read there about someone's cat. And then coming back to the VR, Dungeon Buster says, if I were to get into VR, I'd probably lean toward the Vives. Recent accounts of PSVR seem positive, too. They do. And but the Vive is here today, and that's kind of the thing. The Vive is the full VR experience that everybody wants. It is there today. Oculus will be there on October 6th, but the developers on the Vive, they've been doing this for a while. So, you know, all the room scale stuff is already there, and it's already working on the Vive, and it's already a lot of fun. But the Rift will get there, too. And the other thing that they said about the touch sensors, before I move on, the company also announced a suite of games and experiences that either use the controllers or even require them, meaning that the Oculus Rift community will be split if only a small percentage of players purchase the controllers. So that's kind of this was kind of the problem that Oculus was going to face when they had to release as early as they did. And I think they released as early as they did because of HTC, and they wanted to get the jump on HTC and be out at the same time. Because now we're going to have the same thing that happened with the Xbox 360 and the Kinect, which I know didn't, you know, the Kinect ultimately wasn't worthy anyway. But the fact is, the Kinect started splitting the community. And because not everybody bought a Kinect, which is why they included a Kinect with all Xbox Ones, and then it turned out not to be worthy. That's going to happen here is you're going to have a lot of people that have Oculus Rifts that don't have the touch controllers. And yet a lot of the big Oculus Rift experiences now are going to require those controllers. and people aren't going to have them. They're going to say, wait a minute, I spent $600 on the Oculus Rift, and I now have to spend another $200 just to play the games now, that the highly rated games. That's not going to go over too well. Whereas on the Vive, people already paid the $800 and they got the full package. They don't need to buy anything else. Breakman says, the Kinect was a cool idea, but almost a total fail. It was a fail in games, but I think it really made up in like hospitals and in business environments and stuff like that, where Kinect actually makes sense. For games, it didn't really make that much sense. The other thing that Oculus announced is that the barrier to entry of having PC VR is a little bit lower now. It's almost as low as barrier entry to get a PSVR, even though the Rift is more expensive than the PlayStation VR. But Polygon also reported that at Oculus Connect, CEO Brand Areeb announced a new lower minimum hardware spec for using the Oculus Rift. This is thanks to a technology called asynchronous space warp, not time warp, but space warp, allowing systems to deliver a stable 45 frames per second while the ASW technology effectively doubles that and fills in the gaps. This means smooth VR running on cheaper hardware. So basically, in order to get smooth VR, you need 90 frames a second. With this technology, the hardware, the graphics hardware, only needs to render 45 frames. And then the asynchronous space warp actually doubles that, so you don't need as beefy of a computer. So now all you need for the Oculus Rift is an NVIDIA 960 or greater, which is down from the GTX 970 or AMD 290 equivalent, an Intel i3 6100 or AMD FX 4350 or greater, which is down from the i5 equivalent or greater. You still need 8 gigs of RAM. You still need HDMI 1.3 video output. You only need one USB 3.0 port and then two USB 2.0 ports, which used to require two USB 3.0 ports. So you don't need all the 3.0 ports anymore. But you do need Windows 8 or newer. You cannot run the Oculus Rift on a Windows 7 Service Pack 1 anymore. You need to upgrade to at least Windows 8 and really Windows 10 for really the best experience. In addition to this lower spec, there is now a $499 Oculus Ready AMD powered PC built by CyberPower. So now for $500 you can get a PC that respects this minimum spec, and then you spend the $600 on the Oculus Rift and $200 on the touch controllers, and then you have VR in your house for the low cost of, I decided not to do this math in my head, so you can do it for me. Still cheaper to get a PlayStation 4 and a PSVR. So that was kind of the big news from Oculus, I'm looking forward. I did order the Oculus Rift, pre-order it. That gave me my spot in line to get Oculus Touch, so I can actually now get in that line tomorrow, Monday, at like 3:00. Order my touch controllers. Hope that they get here sometime in December, and I might even try to get the extra sensor. So I will hand them my money. Here is my money, Oculus. Take it so I can see what you have to offer. Because I do like the Rift. I like the hardware of the Rift. It's just, you know, if I'm going to play VR, I'd rather have the full VR experience that I have with the Vive right now. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all works. I did like the touch controllers the one time I used them several years ago. So I'm excited about this. And I'm glad that there's still some positivity in there, as reported at Oculus Connect 3. Because the internet makes it seem like there's no positivity at all. So the interview tonight, we're going to go ahead and jump into this interview. This is unfortunately a pre-recorded interview for the people on the live feed. So, but I hope you listen to it a little bit. This is actually with Nick Lang. He is the senior producer at Turn 10 Studios, which makes the Forza Motorsport franchise. And I kind of want to just kind of preface with this, because I know we've talked about Forza, especially with Forza Horizon out right now. There is extremely little Forza talk in this, and that is due to necessity. He was there talking about the game industry, because this is kind of a game developers conference, and he was still gracious enough and nice enough to sit down with a podcast that's about gaming and not necessarily an insider podcast. And so I talked with him beforehand and kind of like tried to figure out what the ground rules are. And because Forza Horizon is out and Turn 10 didn't make Forza Horizon, he really shouldn't talk about the Forza Motorsport series, because they want all the PR to be about Horizon. And this was not approved by Microsoft's PR. We didn't clear it with them. I think Edelman is their PR agency. Didn't even talk to them or anything. So he was doing this to be nice. And so I respected the boundaries. So if you're hoping that I ask him about the Drivatar system, you're going to be sorely disappointed because it does not come up at all in this. There is a little bit about Forza, but it's not the kind of thing that you would think. This is more about his keynote speech that he talked about being a good manager or being a good leader, which is actually applicable anywhere. It's not just the game industry, even though his talk focused on the game industry. So that's what this is about. But I will say on the Drivatar thing, I did tell him my concerns, and he hears them. I'm not the only one that's told him about it. He understands it, and that's all I will kind of repeat here. So, industry coffee talk, according to Dungeon Buster, that is what we're going to get. This is me from Siege last night. This was recorded last night, so quick turnaround on this. So this is me from Siege with Nick Lang.
So I am here at a boardroom in Siege where they've been doing media interviews, and I am fortunate enough and privileged enough to be able to spend a little bit of time with Nick Lang. He is a senior producer at Turn 10 Studios. You guys know that I am a huge fan of the Forza Motorsport series, and I'm really excited to talk to him. And he actually gave a really great keynote talk tonight about management and leadership. So that's actually what we're going to be spending most of the time talking about tonight, because I think it's really applicable even outside of the game industry. But Nick, thank you so much for coming down to Atlanta and spending some time with me. What brings you down here to Atlanta? Because I know you're up in Washington.
Sure, yeah. Came down here to, first, it's great to be here. Thanks. It's nice to be part of the podcast. I think it's interesting because a friend of a friend referred me to give a talk here at Siege, and I'd always heard about Siege, and I lived in the Southeast for a while, so I like Georgia and Atlanta and all that. And when I got the offer, I was honored and came down and trying to spend as much time as I can at the conference and meet as many people. It's been great.
So let's first talk about your past, like where you came from. So how did you get your start in the industry? I mean, we know you're at Turn 10 now, but you were at many places before then. So where have you been before?
Sure. I guess that's a long story, I suppose. Going back to 1999, I started where I left a non-lucrative career in comic books and got a job as a UI artist for a company called Hypnotics in New Jersey. And I worked there as a UI artist, designer, producer, animator, small company, wear a lot of hats for about 4 or 5 years. And then that company was acquired by EA Tiburon and moved down to Orlando in 2005. And spent 11 years there, had a great time, really created my producer persona, so to speak, working on titles such as NASCAR, NFL Street, the EA MMA game. Also did Tour of Duty on a number of other titles, of course, to make Madden and NCAA down there.
They need to make that again.
Yeah, a lot of people really agree, like, especially down here, man. College football.
That's me.
It's a religion. Yeah, so I spent a lot of time there, and then I got the opportunity to move my family up to the Pacific Northwest and start to contribute to the Turn 10 franchise, Forza Motorsport.
And one of the titles that you also worked on early on, I kind of wanted to call this out because I was a huge fan of this, because in the keynote you were saying some titles and nobody was nodding except like maybe I was one of the few, like two or three people nodding. But the Outlaw title, specifically Outlaw Golf, must have been a fun one to work on back on the original Xbox.
Right. Yeah, I guess you've been in the industry for a while. We start and naming out obscure games that turn out to be quite obscure and nobody remembers. I'm going to have to come up with some new material for my next talk. Yeah, those were crazy days because it was a pretty small studio. Hypnotics probably at its peak was about 35 people. And we did all the Outlaw titles. So there was, I think Outlaw Golf was the first one. Then there was Outlaw Volleyball. And that was on the original Xbox. And Outlaw Volleyball came out on PS2 and the original Xbox. Then there was a second Outlaw Golf game. And then there was a... Outlaw Tennis, I think, was 2004, 2005. Yeah, some of that stuff was by the seat of our pants, just figuring it out. We started to do mocap inside the office space, so we had to pull the ceiling tiles out of the office. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the reason that I really remember Outlaw Golf is because this was back like when Xbox Live was really in its infancy, and I had a group of friends that we would that's how we would talk. You know, we would still, instead of calling on the phone, I mean, nowadays we'd text, but we would call, instead of calling on the phone, we'd load up Outlaw Golf because it was more social. It wasn't like we were so immersed in the game trying to shoot things. You know, one person would take their shot and the rest of us would be just talking about whatever in the world. But it was also actually a really good golf game because we would also play Lynx, which is the serious Microsoft competitor. But we would go back to Outlaw Golf, even, and you were telling me earlier, it's actually really got good. The producer there really loved Golf Simulation, and so actually made it a good golf game underneath all the goofiness.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I can't believe you brought this game up. I enjoy talking about it. There's so many interesting things about it, but. Yeah, I think a lot of people, once they looked past the characters, this is family friendly, I assume, so we
don't
go into too much detail. So once you look past the non-family friendly characters, you realize that there was a really solid golf game there. And actually, a number of the producers, they were friends from a while back. They were actually quite interested in it. Golf simulations. It was really solid. It's funny that you mention Xbox Live and playing online and being able to connect with friends. That's definitely how I stayed connected with my friends after college, you know. But do you remember the mechanic where you could push the button to make fun of them while they were getting ready to putt?
Yes.
And it would shake the controller?
Yes. They did that to me all the time.
Why don't more games do that?
They need to do that.
I remember the girl Harley. She would be like, "You're a tool."
Yes.
And then your controller would vibrate while you were trying to make the 60-foot putt or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, it's perfect.
No, it was great, and so I wanted to bring that up. But you are now a producer, and your talk tonight was about being a producer, and probably a lot of people that are in my audience, they play games, and they're kind of interested in how they're made, but they don't maybe know what each role does. They know a programmer, they know an artist, but what really does a producer do?
Sure. That's a long answer too. I think the best thing, the best short version is that producers, the intention of producers actually originated with EA founder Trip Hawkins. He used the example of music, the music producer, not the film producer. In film, it tends to be more money and schedule and budget. But the music producer tends to be that balance point of creation. They know the instruments. They know the music. They know songwriting. They also know the technical aspects of mixing and the business. They are this centralized point. And in games, it's very similar to that as well. So being able to speak competently to the different disciplines while of course aligning and motivating and building trust is key and core to being a producer. A lot of people say it's a facilitator and a support person, and that is true, but it can be quite nuanced when done to its fullest extent.
And your keynote talk here, which I'm pretty sure the Georgia Game Developer Association, they live streamed it, and I believe it's also going to be available. It was about the difference between management and leadership. So I do want to encourage people to go and watch the actual whole talk. But can you kind of give like a Cliff's Notes version of kind of what you're thinking of is between management and leadership and what that means for even somebody who doesn't have anybody report to them?
Right. I think management versus leadership was a key component of the talk. The subject primarily was about the personal leadership that you do by yourself. One of the reveals of why personal leadership, and if you skip to the end, really the answer is discipline. One of the reasons why discipline is so important becomes manifest in the difference between leadership and management. Some people think, I'm a leader because I manage people, or how can I manage people and not be a leader? The truth is they're complementary but different systems of action, whereas management is about process and control and planning. Leadership is about motivation and alignment, creating vision. Leadership generally takes a little bit more, a higher perspective so that you can anticipate future risks and capitalize on growth opportunities. That is about strategic vision. But once you have that stuff down, then you kind of get down into the details and put together the plan and how to get to that goal, how to create a structure of progress, and also sometimes react to the problems that happen during development. I mean, nothing goes smoothly all the time, but a manager needs to have a system in place to solve problems, fight fires. But that's not always leadership. That's kind of controlling damage. It's an interesting component to the difference between that Captain Kirk on the hill leader. Everybody look at him. He's gonna tell us where to go. And you're more isolated and you're working on your own sphere of influence, your own sphere of control, really, and still taking into effect those leadership principles.
So how did you, because you've got probably both the management and the leadership skills. How did you, did you have to learn how to be a leader? Did it just come to you, or did you study it? How does someone figure out how to be a leader?
So, that's a really good question. I would never be so bold as to say that I am a natural leader. In fact, I think that maybe leadership has a lot more to do with understanding your environment. And I think I mentioned during my keynote that, interestingly enough, my experience with organized sports kind of started that understanding of, okay, a leader is an important person. It's valuable to have a good one. Oh, by the way, you don't have to be the best person at that sport to be the leader. Sometimes that is the same thing, but there are a very clear hierarchy. And once that was the sort of the ingrained paradigm of leadership in my head as I went through to college and I started running a couple of clubs and realized that, oh, you know what, if I'm going to be this person that others feel is in charge, then I better understand that. And game developers especially, but I think everybody is well, they think that we should all be students. And so when I realized that was going to be a big part of my life, I went ahead and started to read books, read articles, follow up and find mentors that I found were very valuable in leadership and follow that course all the way through. And I would never consider, always a student of leadership. And there's a lot of sources to go to.
Well, obviously, you've done a good job of it. I do kind of want to end kind of on one last question, because, you are currently at Turn 10 and you are at Forza, but you were in Florida and Turn 10's up in Washington. Why the hell would you leave the Southeast? Why would you leave Orlando? Why would you leave Florida to go work on the Forza franchise?
Yeah, I love the Southeast, and I loved Florida, and I did miss the hurricane, though, so that worked out.
We missed it here in Atlanta, too, so I was like...
I hope everybody's doing okay. That's another really good question. I guess I'll tell you a story. I don't think too many people know this, even at my job. I had a great job at EA. I enjoyed the people I worked with. I enjoyed the place. I enjoyed the facilities. I had a chance to travel all over the world. It was great. But there was an opportunity that came to me from Microsoft through Turn 10 to work on the Forza Motorsport franchise, and really what this is about is having a chance to be part of a franchise. It's really important to me. You don't get that opportunity in your career, and my father actually fed all his children and paid all his bills as a professional in racing. He was a crew chief for Indy teams, for NASCAR teams, and spent a lot of time on the Trans Am circuit. So some of my best memories with my dad, that sounded like he's dead. Actually, I still have these great memories with him. When Forza Motorsport comes out, one of the things that we do is we all get together, my brother and my father, and, I'll drive laps in Forza and go as fast as I can, and then he will tune the car because he spent so much time as an engineer and a crew chief, and then he'll give me the car back, and then I'll go run the laps, and then he'll yell at me for not being fast enough, and then tune it again, and then I'll go out and run more laps. To be part of a franchise that has that kind of impact on my family was valuable, so That is one of the big reasons why I moved to Washington. I do want to say that Orlando gets more rain than Seattle. It's just every afternoon between 3 and 4, it rains buckets. And in Seattle, it just kind of rains all day between October and June.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me tonight and for coming down to Atlanta. I really do appreciate it. If you can go to ggda.org, I believe. I'll actually put the link in the show notes and tell everybody. I'm doing this off the top of my head onto where you can find the keynote. What do you think? You know, last question. What do you think of Siege? Now that this is your first Siege down here, what do you think of it?
Oh, I had a great time. I had an absolute time. It's great to see the growth in Georgia. There's a really interesting talk about what has happened in the last decade. That's fascinating. I like the local flair of it with all the indies and some of the big teams all working together just to kind of make the community work. I love that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, luckily there's still one night left, so we'll go enjoy it. Thanks so much for spending some time with me.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Bobby.
All right. Welcome back. We're now back live. Thank you so much to Nick Lang for spending that time with me and stuff and humoring me with it. We talked a little bit of Forza at the very end. I did not in the few minutes that I had, I didn't look for the link right now, so I can't tell you if there's a link. I don't know if they are offering it publicly or not. But by the time this show goes up on the podcast feed, you can go to vognetwork.com, and I will put in the show notes the information about where to find, if you can find it, the keynote. I know it was streamed live, but I don't know if it was actually saved. And what that's going to be like. But nobody, the person from the GGDA that was in there didn't correct me when I would say that it was to be available. So we'll see. So we do actually have a little bit of time for calls. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. We can talk about anything going on in the gaming industry. Mafia 3 came out. That was a big, big release that came out. And I know that there's a lot of people that are enjoying that. But other than that, I you know, what else has been going on other than, like, you know, I know Oculus Connect was this week, and there were obviously more things shown there than normal. And then this week for the VR stuff, PlayStation VR comes out this coming week. That's going to be huge, and I know some people in chat have already said they're going to get it, and this is going to be their first VR experience. So I'm really excited about that. Dungeon Buster says, Mafia 3 is pretty fun. I'm enjoying it, but I don't like what the patch did to the weapon wheel. So I think he was pointing out, like, that there was and I think I saw your tweets, Dungeon Buster, so I'll kind of condense them. It was like on the weapon wheel, you can choose between lethal and non-lethal weapons, and then the launch day patch moved that over to the option screen. I believe that's like the Cliff Notes version, which is kind of weird to do that. Unfortunately, if I had read your tweets 2 days earlier, I could have asked somebody, because somebody that I know from who used to be in the Atlanta game dev scene, he was a world designer on Mafia 3. So he's been, you know, the game launched. So he's been, you know, this was kind of his vacation. He's been at home visiting family back here in Atlanta. He was at Siege and I talked to him a little bit. And if I had seen your tweets like a day earlier, I could have asked him what the deal was. Dungeon Buster said, yes, it was really confusing. Suddenly I couldn't switch over to it from the weapon wheel and tried to find it. Because I think what he said is, you know, there was a launch day patch that he didn't install. He just, like, got the game, installed it, and didn't wait for the download, so he went ahead and started playing it. So he played the certified version and not the actual release version, and then the release version did that. So that was kind of weird. And unfortunately, I don't know when I'm going to see my buddy again, or talk to him again to ask him why they did that. All right, so nobody's going to be calling in tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and we'll move on, because I know that there's some big stuff going on tonight on the next show. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. They were also out last week because they were at GamerX, so we like to check in with them. Sacramento, you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's weird. It feels so long since I've done a show.
Yeah. And you do like four podcasts, so it shouldn't really feel that long.
I was going to say, if you wait any longer, he may start up another podcast.
Well, Guys on the Show has been on a little bit of a creative hiatus, although it's certainly not done. It'll be back soon. Xfer and I had a chance to talk about some stuff while we were at GamerX because he was there. But even Pokestop Podcast, we didn't actually do until yesterday. So I really felt like I had a big, long break from my shows. So, but breaks are good, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You rest your voice a little bit.
I did.
Yeah.
I did, even though, well, I had to do a panel. I was lucky enough to do a panel at GamerX, and there was no mics in the room that we had, but we had a very small room. So it was very clear they tried to give us something that acoustically would lend itself very well to recording a podcast, except we didn't actually bring all our recording gig because we figured they always do video, and then that didn't happen this year. But it was just a comedy of errors. However, the panel went very well, and we're still very lucky and happy that GamerX kind of lets us do that.
That's cool. So how was GamerX? Like, how did the table go over? Fill me in.
We had a good time. The expo hall was a great space. In fact, this is the same space, I believe, if I'm hearing everything correctly. Don't take my word for it, but Mag West will be using the same space next year for their debut here on the West Coast. And I really liked the space this year. It was very spacious, especially compared to like years one and two. Last year's was a big space, but this one was just kind of, I don't know, it's just a little better, the way it was laid out and everything. A lot of the big players we saw last year were back this year and actually stepped things up with their booths. Mm-hmm. Like Oculus was there this year. They were actually demoing the Oculus Rift. Now, since I'm lucky enough to have a buddy that has every VR unit under the sun, I didn't really stand around to play it.
But now, are you going to get a Pixel, so that he can also get the next VR thing for mobile as well?
No. But what was I going to say? Oh, Intel had they had a very different booth than what they had last year. Last year, they just had like a big sign, like, and it asked a question that everybody was writing in whiteboard. But this year, they had a cute little photo op thing, and they were giving away little like Gamer Pride socks, which was pretty cool. But they actually had laptops that some indie developers were showcasing some games on Intel hardware. So that was pretty cool. So it was nice that there was a little bit more kind of a step up with, especially some of the bigger companies that come, actually like bringing games. So I enjoyed that.
That's cool. Siege, it was the Siege kind of had the indie game stuff. I didn't speak on any panels, but I did meet somebody you've met because Kat from the IGDA actually came out.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, she was the SAC IGDA thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, Kat went. Yeah. She's great. I like her a lot.
Yeah, so she says hi.
Hi.
Because I went up to her and I'm like, you've met the other side of Vogue. And she's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. We were at the table at the SAC Indie Arcade. Uh-huh. Was she the keynote that year?
I think so.
I think she was. I think she was the kickoff speech this year.
Yeah. So she says hi. So I ran into her.
That's great. Yeah, small world.
Yeah, well, because she was coming out because the IGDA Atlanta chapter had a presence at Siege. So she came out to support the IGDA Atlanta chapter.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, IGDA was actually at GamerX, too. But funny enough, I didn't see her. But maybe that explains why. Maybe it's because... she was getting ready to go to Atlanta.
Yeah. So we're almost all conventioned out.
It is not even over for me yet, Bobby. Oh, wow. Next weekend, I will be back in time for OLR, mm-hmm. crossing my fingers and toes. But you're going to get a Loki-produced episode of OLR next week because I will be getting back from the airport at like 3 o'clock and zip back over here to Studio N7. I'm in Vegas this weekend for Final Fantasy Fan Festival. Ooh. Or Final Fantasy 14 players, which will be chock full of news about the expansion. So since I don't have a Horde House show to get all that out on anymore, I'll probably unload it here with all the MMO talks.
You could do it on guys of on a show.
Yeah, but Xfer doesn't play online stuff really anymore. So
yeah, but he doesn't contribute that much to the conversation.
How rude.
Just kidding. How rude. Xfer.
Don't worry, Xfer doesn't listen to my show, so he would never hear that.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
So let me ask you guys this, because this week's the week. Did you guys cancel PlayStation VR orders?
Ooh, stay tuned to find out.
Ooh.
It's a teaser. Both Loki and I have come to independent decision. The only reason I'm teasing your audience like this is because we were talking about this just before you called, and I was like, oh, yeah, we need to discuss this on air tonight about our final answer on the PlayStation VR and why we picked it. So I'm unfortunately, Bobby, going to leave you with an ugly tease tonight. Mm-hmm.
And is tonight the night that you have an interview?
We do. Actually, Bobby, we've had lots of interviews lately. You've been on a roll lately. I'm excited. Yes, tonight we are going to be interviewing Ryan from Retro Dreamer, and they are the makers of the game Monster and Monocles, which is available on Steam Early Access right now and is targeted for PlayStation 4 release. I'm not sure when, but I know there's an official trailer on
it. I'm surprised it's Early Access because it looked pretty good even a year ago.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's one of the same. In fact, I kind of want to ask Ryan about that, about like what is it, what all is in that last 10%? Because when you showed it a year ago, it looked, I would have bought it then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know sometimes it's level design, polish, I'm sure there's other things, but we'll get the answer from the developer themselves. And what I also think is really cool about them as a studio, they're obviously they're indie, but they're in different places. Like Ryan lives in Northern California. He's not far from us. And then his partner that he works with on the games with is in Southern California. So they don't really get to be in the same space very often. So I, you know, we'll talk about kind of that and developing across long distances, because I find that very cool what they do with that.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do, because like in my day job we're a remote company,
right?
So I'm always on, you know, Google Hangouts or something with my coworkers,
right,
to get stuff done. So also I kind of wanted to mention this because I'm going to have him on the show. There was an indie game that he came up, like I had done a video interview with somebody. And he pulled me, he's like, somebody, he came up to me, he's like, I was told that I should show you my game. And awesome. And this was, and he didn't understand how awesome it was that he had me show it, because he made an audio game. And he made a game specifically for blind people, or visually impaired people. And I told him, yeah, one of my favorite listeners, well, you're all my favorite listeners, but one of my favorite listeners is visually impaired. And he also listens to your show. And he's like, great. I haven't had anybody who's actually visually impaired play my game.
Interesting. So the developer themselves not visually impaired.
Right. So what he did, and this is actually kind of interesting what he did. The game's called Rest Your Eyes. Uh-huh. And it's actually, the demo is available now on Game Jolt for free. Uh-huh. And it's actually turned into a YouTube sensation as well, because it does work. Like, it actually does output to the screen, but the gimmick is you're supposed to blindfold yourself.
Right.
So everybody else can see what you're doing, but all you can do is hear, and it uses audio cues to tell you when you're at the end of the platform. And it's basically a platforming game where you're trying to collect gems. But, like, the faster the beat goes, the closer you are to the edge, and then the pitches tell you if the next platform is above you or below you. And so it's like that. So I already sent the link to Stirlock, but I'm going to have him on the show do a live interview probably next month, because not next week, and I'm out the following week.
Email me offline, because we had another visually impaired listener in Indonesia. I'm not sure if he still listens to the show, but you remember that Ramaditya Knight?
Mm-hmm.
That I believe, if I remember right, and I'm going to feel horrible if I'm wrong, but I remember right, he was visually impaired too.
Yeah.
And maybe interested. I don't know if he's still listening, but yeah.
Yeah, but he's actually looking for feedback. It's called Rest Your Eyes, and I'm going to have him on the show. But he's looking for feedback from people who can't see, because he can see just fine, but he's really interested in the idea of audio games and doing that type of stuff, making a game that other people who can't normally play games can play.
I think that's awesome, but you know what I'd be curious about? And, you know, I have to think about, like, the nice way to ask this, because I don't want to sound attacking, or I don't want to sound like Tumblr or something like that, but I would almost worry, you know, because you talk about this being a YouTube sensation and people blindfolding themselves, is it turning visual disability into a gimmick? That would, and that's like a really fine line, I think. So, I mean, I want to think of a more polite way to ask that, you know what I mean? But I think that's a valid question that probably should be asked, is that, you know, how are you going to make sure that this game is not seen as a gimmick with some of this stuff on YouTube? So, you know, just a hard question, but I think one.
And I don't think, like, he's not doing the YouTubing. I think just people are getting the game and putting them up.
Yeah,
and streaming it without him, and he finds that later.
Mm.
But it's becoming popular because everybody can see what the streamer is supposed to do, but the streamer can't see it.
Mm. Almost sounds like one of those you have to talk and don't explode.
Yeah, keep talking and nobody explodes.
That's right. Keep talking, nobody explodes. That one, or the Jackbox one that they had in their last party pack, the Office game that was a similar thing. Bomb Corps.
Yeah. So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Well, believe it or not, there's been quite a bit of news going on. Although I would say it's been a little bit of a slower week this week than weeks past. But Bobby, you'll be very happy. I don't think we have a single thing at all tonight on NX or any speculation there.
That's so plausible.
It is plausible we will have a show tonight where we don't bring up the NX at all. Well, I don't know. Loki is
bound
to say something.
In a positive manner, yes.
But we'll also talk about PlayStation VR. We're going to talk about a very interesting... Is Valve providing legalized gambling? The state of Washington has some concerns. So we're going to get into that a little bit. We'll talk also as well. The Fallout mods are going to be happening on PlayStation 4 after all when they said they wouldn't. So a lot of back and forth there.
Well, they're already providing drugs, so you know.
And, of course, our friend Ryan with Monsters and Monocles and Retro Dreamer. We're going to have him on live in about 30 minutes.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Good to be back. Thanks, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, to talk about the PlayStation VR, because I'll have it here. It'll be at the Voice of Geeks Network, VogNetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. No show the following week, October 23rd. No show that night. Feel free to leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for using the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf is where I am, or you can submit feedback on the episode page here at VogNetwork.com. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. I know this show is not for everybody, but it may be for someone who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. So thank you very much, DC Nate, Sky, VHJSNXV, Fifth Dream, Shadow Next Gen, Tech-Claw, Loki, Breakman, Alan Alchemy, Betsy Jane, Brad from Pod Culture, Burr, Act Deft, DeBlue Guy, Dungeon Buster, Immortal King, Kaijudo, Kazan, Mako, Matt Cube, MXC, MXT, Orange Wright, Point, Raginator, and SSJ100 Matt. So that's it. Enjoy OLR. That's really the best thing going on tonight is OLR. Because the main event of that wrestling thing already happened. So you don't need to watch that anymore. Just listen to OLR. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.